the speaker tonight, you know, ever since I've been a member of this, de facto member of this home group, I've had the privilege of chairing a few meetings, and I haven't really known too many of the people that I have been the chairperson to sound their story, and unfortunately that really is true tonight. I do not know Thaddeus, but I know of him. I've sat in many meetings with him over there at the 4 o'clock meeting at Triangle, which is a meeting I used to go to regularly all the time, and I know that he has always got something good to say about whatever the topic is, and I'm sure he'll have a good message of recovery for you guys to listen to tonight. So with that being said, please welcome Thaddeus.
All right. I'm Thaddeus, I'm an alcoholic. I've been preparing for this about 2 months now. So I got a good message for you. I ain't much, but I am all I think about. I want to thank Mike for asking me, and I never say no when someone asks me to do service work, because I believe that that's where the rubber meets the road. And I've heard so many stories that when you stop, you know, hang around and stop doing service work, you go back out and you go back to the place that you were before. And I don't want to be there. I want to be sober more than I want to be drunk. And so I do what I can to stay sober. I try to live this program to the best of my ability. Don't live it perfect, but I do try to, you know, to work the steps and do what the program suggests. I've been in the program since June of 96, and I retired from the Navy. And when I retired from the Navy, I retired that life of drinking and partying and all that craziness that you do. I wasn't forced to come in. I knew a little bit about AA when I came in because I was forced the first time. I probably should have a little bit more than those years because I actually was introduced to AA in 93. But I wasn't ready to stop. And so if you're not ready, I always say you got to go back out and do some research and development. You know, you have to go back out until you actually want it staying better, more than you want to get drunk. And that's what I had to do. So I'm just sharing my experience, strength, and hope with you, and hopefully you can relate. I basically grew up in the South, in Virginia, about an hour from Norfolk. All right. And out in the country. And so a lot of people think that, you know, when you're out in the country, you don't do a lot, but we did a hell of a lot. And I heard one guy say the other night at a speaker meeting that he thought he was a black sheep of the family. And then when he came to AA, he found the rest of the flock. So, okay, I grew up in a black family, so I thought I was a white sheep of the family. Okay. And so I always, you know, felt different, I guess. I always got those punishments that none of my sisters and brothers, they didn't get. I was always, and today they call it child abuse. You know, back then it was just discipline, whoopings. They call it whoopings back then. I grew up in the 60s. I'm 57 years old. Actually, next month I'll be 57. And so I grew up in a life of, you know, where it was real discipline. And you got beatings. And so I always, for some reason, felt different. And I grew up in a religious family, and it seemed like a lot of people in AA are religious for whatever reason. I heard one lady tell her story, and she said she was a member of the CIA. You know, she was a Catholic, Irish, and alcoholic. And so, you know, it's a lot of Catholics, it seemed like, in AA that end up here for whatever reason, Southern Baptist. So, you know, I lived that life of being disciplined all the time. You wasn't supposed to drink. You know, you wasn't supposed to live that, you know, that life. And everybody knew all about that kind of a life, because a lot of people probably can relate and probably grew up that way themselves. But that wasn't really something that I liked. I went along with the program because I didn't have any other choice. And so I had a pretty decent childhood. You know, you don't know any better a lot of times when you're growing up, and, you know, things are just the way they are. I always somewhat compliant. You know, I complied with some of the rules and regulations, but I still was at the same time defiant. And so I didn't get into a lot of trouble in school drinking. I did get drunk. Probably, I think I started drinking at the age about 13. At the age about 13, started playing around with it. And I just remember one time, maybe a couple of times, getting drunk at high school games and what have you. And I thought I was a cheerleader, you know, out on the field, and had to be escorted off the field. And that, I didn't get into trouble. So that wasn't no big deal. I did all the partying and all that. My main problems started really when I went into the Navy. You know, when I left home, when I went into the Navy, when I was 17, and I retired when I was 39, I spent 22 years in the Navy. And so when I went into the Navy, that's when everything just, you know, just fell apart. But it was really, really fun. It was actually fun, you know. And I went into the Navy, like I said, 17, turning 18, and, you know, you could drink. You could drink. We would have liquid lunches, what we call. We'd go to the club at lunchtime and watch the strippers back then in 74. You know, that was lunch. Is drinking beer and watching strippers. And I'm 18 years old, growing up in the country, you didn't see any strippers. You know, I saw cows and pigs and hogs and stuff like that doing it, but I didn't see strippers. And so, you know, I had my first pizza really in the Navy, because my parents, we ate soul food. And she wasn't cooking any kind of a pizza, what is that? When in the Navy they had pizza, I fell in love with it. And so I fell in love with stuff that I wasn't exposed to. And so it was fun. I got to admit, being in the military, it was just great. it was party. And I didn't really get into any major trouble until the end. But I basically started out, and then in the military, a lot of times they cover up a lot of stuff. You know, if you get into trouble back then, you know, it was basically what was it, DWI. You know, you wasn't driving under the influence. It was basically, you know, you get into trouble and you could get swept under the rug. I think I had my first DWI when I was about maybe 19. And it wasn't a big deal because I was leaving where I was stationed anyway, and so it didn't follow me. And back then, it wasn't no big deal. It used to not be a big deal. And everybody looks like a few older people in here, as old as I am at least. So you probably remember those days and that where you could drink and didn't get into trouble with the law. And so that was my first introduction, I guess you could say, with being drunk and driving. But as I went along, because I had a high tolerance for alcohol, real high tolerance, I didn't start getting hangovers until like maybe probably after about 20 years of drinking. For some reason, I didn't get hangovers. I had a high tolerance. I was always, because I could drive very well drunk, I was always a designated drunk driver. You know? Everybody always, and I never did get into trouble and get caught. You know, I was one of those guys that didn't get caught, basically, and until the end. And I can tell you right now, if you continue to drink like I did, and if you're an alcoholic, it does catch up with you eventually. Whether you want to admit it or not, it does catch up with you. And I was always, I guess you could say, looking at the book description, I was an alcoholic, but I never admitted that, of course. You know, and they define it as, you know, if when you honestly want to, you know, you find you can't quit entirely, you can't control, you know, your alcohol, you're probably an alcoholic. And, of course, I never really tried to control it. And to the end, all my stuff happened at the end, right at 93. And so I went along for a long time just having fun. Really having a great time. You know, I used to like the women and loud music, and I was married at an early age, but it didn't matter, you know. So, and then being in the military, I was always, you know, flying overseas. I worked in aviation. So it was basically, it was a great deal. You know, you had money in your pocket, a lot of women, foreign women, all kinds of women, and you know, and alcohol. You know, I used to brag about being an international drinker, you know, you drink all overseas and what have you. It was just great. It was just great. That's the way it was. And at that time, I really, really enjoyed life with alcohol. But, you know, at the end, I always say I drink the fun out of alcohol. Because at the end, it wasn't fun anymore. And so I went along, and you know, I never really got into trouble in the military until the end of my career. And I was stationed right here. I was stationed all throughout the continental United States. and just basically had a great time. You know, really young, I worked out a lot. I was always into exercise, and we work hard and party hard. And so you hear that a lot. You know, you hear that a lot, that, you know, just basically that's what you did. And so at the end, I was stationed. I got another, I guess, warning toward the end when I was stationed in California. And if anyone has ever been out to California, that's a great drinking place, San Diego, where I was stationed. And so it was just, you know, fun time all the time, sunshine, wasn't much rain. And I just had a great life at one point in time, to be honest with you. I shared this with in one of my stories over at Rebo's. And I was saying that I had fun at one point in time drinking. And the guy, that he's passed away now, said, you know, there's no fun time in drinking. I don't know what kind of drink he did, but, you know, that was a fun time for me at one point in time with drinking. And so that was probably the best time I had when I was stationed out there. And then I started getting into trouble where it started to get out of hand a little bit. And I never really, like I say, got caught. I got a couple of warnings by cops. You know, being a designated drunk driver, still never really got caught and got stopped a couple of times. So I had a lot of not yets. And so I remember when I got stationed here, though, that's when it really got out of hand. And I was getting older, and I was drinking a lot, and then I was getting caught. And so the Navy saw fit that what I was doing on base, telling my superiors, you know, to go to hell. And, you know, you don't do that in the military. You just can't do it and get away with it. And so, you know, I got to that point where I was really being real verbally abusive at work, and then at home the same way. And that's when it started catching up with me. They saw fit that I needed to go to treatment. And that's basically where I learned. I thought, I still didn't want to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. I just couldn't believe that alcohol, you could be powerless over it. But I learned a lot about trying to control my drinking and treatment. And that was in 93. And so, you know, I always looked at trying to blame other people. That was when I was trying to blame other people. Well, you know, if I hadn't gotten this at work, if they had given me my promotion like I wanted, I wouldn't have got drunk, blah, blah, blah. And so now, I always say now that, you know, I've been married two times. This is my second marriage. I always say my first wife, she never made me drink. But she made me, however, she made me mighty thirsty. You know, it was just one of them things that, you know, I always could blame other people for whatever was going on. And I never wanted to accept responsibility. Looking at, you know, back now, it was, you know, of course it was me. I was the one. No one ever twisted my arm and poured a drink down my mouth and nothing like that. It was just, it was Thaddeus. And because I enjoyed it. But I got to the point where I went to treatment and actually I still didn't believe it in treatment. I drink in treatment. And this has been in the military now. I don't know whether they can do that now or not, but they gave us a pass off base that weekend after you spent 2 weeks inpatient, and then they gave you, you know, a couple of, you were supposed to go do some spiritual stuff. Okay? That's what you were supposed to do. And so my spiritual stuff was to get a hotel room and fly my girlfriend down from Atlanta down to Florida and really do some spiritual stuff with alcohol. So we got real busy and real spiritual. And of course, I went back and they asked me, what did you do Monday? Of course, I didn't tell them the truth. And so I basically, you know, just couldn't believe that I was an alcoholic, got out of treatment, and flew back. As a matter of fact, when I was flying back to Atlanta, got drunk. And, you know, the Navy tried it. I look at this show now called Intervention. You know, the Navy tried an intervention. I heard an intervention is nothing more than a judgment surprise party. And, you know, they tried to intervene, and they tried to do what they could, but I had to rely on that. What I learned in treatment when I came in here in 96, that's how I actually came in here, realizing that when I had that in 93, those little 2 weeks, then I went out and drank, and then the other 2 weeks, it was the best time of my life. And so, you know, I had to play the tape all the way back to 93 and realize that actually was the best time of my life, just those 2 weeks of not drinking, even though I wasn't ready to admit that. And so from, you know, 93 to 96, I just tried to drink as much as I could then, when I was drinking before I went to treatment, but it stopped working. Alcohol stopped working. And like I say, you know, a belly full of booze and a head full of AA, it doesn't work, you know, and it really doesn't. It just, something has changed. Something had changed, and this was something unusual for me. It had changed. I just couldn't get as drunk and didn't have as much fun. And that was the point. That was the point. That was my turning point. And I had basically a spiritual awakening that, you know, that I believed that this program was working and would work for me. And so I just continued to do what I've learned in treatment, you know, when I started here in AA. And I can't say that all of my life is perfect today, not by long shot, but it's a heck of a lot better than being drunk. There's just so much peace. What I've gained in this program is just something that you basically got to come in and experience. I've heard a lady share just not too long ago. She had about 29 years or something like that, and she said that she had, I guess, followed this man to wherever, and she's disconnected from the program. And so she basically stopped going to meetings and blah, blah, blah. And then I guess all the money was gone, and then he was gone, and then she ended up getting drunk. This is after 29 years of sobriety. And so, you know, when I hear those stories like that, it lets me know that I'm no different. I'm no different, whether you're, you know, black or white, female, or whatever the case may be. I believe that this disease is an equal opportunity. And so I just believe that what I hear in these rooms, I believe most of it is true. You know, still got a lot of people that may profess the truth sometimes, but I believe that when I hear those stories, because what I've learned over the years in reading and studying, because I study a lot the big book, I work where I work now, we deal with a lot of diseases, and I had a contract of mine. One of my contracts was about alcoholism, so I was able to do some scientific research about it. And so I go to a lot of meetings, so I hear a lot of stories. My home group is just for the day, and so it's basically a newcomers meeting. And, you know, people are still coming in telling the same stories, basically, that alcohol is still doing the same thing that it did to me, you know, 17 years ago. And so I got to believe that there's some truth to it. And so what I've learned over the years about the disease of alcoholism is it's fatal, it's progressive, and it's incurable. And so those are the three things that I try to keep in mind. The lady that shared about the 29 years, she was saying that she was right back off to the races. Right back to the races. Right. Actually, she said she was further. Her disease had progressed. It seemed like even further and faster, and was stronger. And so, when I hear that, I gotta believe that there's some truth to it. And so, you know, one of the things that I try to do, I really try to stay in this program and do the best I can. Like I say, I try to do what the book says. I wake up in the morning. I get up. I'm an early riser, so I'm up more than likely probably about 4:30, 5 o'clock. So I'm doing the, you know, upon awakening, you know, and try to make some kind of conscious contact with my higher power. And I meditate a lot. I'm learning to meditate even more. And, you know, I try to stay in the day. I had some tragic news that I heard about 5 hours ago about my father. And my wife asked me, you know, what are you going to do about it? It's really nothing that I can do about situations in life. I just got to pray about it. I got to be present, sober in mind to deal with the problem. It's nothing that I can't play God. You know, I heard this guy the other day talk about if you think you're the CEO of the universe, you need to go home and resign and make the world a better place. Okay. When I hear these things like that that I can relate to, I try to keep them in mind that I'm not the CEO like I used to be. You know, I just don't have the control that I thought I had. And I just don't have to worry about those things. That takes the load off my shoulder. You know, only thing I can say, and I've already prayed several times, the book talks about that too. You know, as you go through the day, you know, if you're agitated and doubtful, you need to pause, you know, and pray and say, you know, many times each day, thy will be done, not mine. You know, we're in less danger of excitement and fear and anger and worry. You know, making foolish decisions, we're much more efficient and effective. And so, you know, like I said, I read that a lot. You know, faith works. You know, fear knocks at the door, faith answers, no one's there. So, you know, I got to believe in a lot of stuff because I'm sober right here, right today. I hadn't had a drink in many, many years. And I used to be a daily drinker. I could never imagine life without drinking. And now I can't imagine life, you know, any other way than today. Don't want to. I'm just hoping and praying that that part of my life, the chapter has been closed permanently. But I've heard enough stories that if I don't continue to do what I'm doing, that it won't be. And so it's a day at a time. I mean, I drove over here 50 miles away. I live 50 miles away from here. The only reason I came over to this side of town this time of night was to be up here. Because I know it works. And I was asked, another person asked me to do something for them in service work in the program Friday. I got to drive another 50 miles. And so I believe that this program works when I share and do my part in it, that God gives back, you know, my sobriety, and I'm able to get through life and relate to people a little bit better, you know, solve problems. Because basically that's what recovery is all about. It's all about dealing with life on life terms. Your life don't get perfect. And if you're here thinking that you're going to have a perfect life, I talked to another young lady. I talked to a lot of people in AA. She has about 3 or 4 years, and she's telling me that she has these problems that she found that she has since she's been sober, health problems that, you know, has come upon her now that she didn't even realize, and it's directly related to her drinking. Okay, we all probably in some kind of way have some kind of a problem that you can contribute to our drinking if we really look at it. But you don't really find out a lot about who you are and what you're about until you come into the rooms and get sober. You know, so once you take away the drink, how are you going to deal with life? You know, what are you going to do? How are you going to deal with it? And if you want to stay sober, the best thing to do is, you know, read the literature, get your sponsor, try to do some service work. I can't tell you there's a shortcut. I wish I could. I was talking to a guy the other day. I was chairing a meeting, and I was telling him that I still go to like 4 or 5 meetings a week. So this guy comes up to me after the meeting and said, "Man, you must be really screwed up still." And I said, "Yeah, I'm somewhat. How much time do you have?" 2 days. Okay. You got a lot to learn, partner. And you'll find out that, you know, if you want to stay sober, you got to do things to stay sober. I can't get by. I don't think I can get by on 1 or 2 meetings a week. I don't think so. Me, that is. I've heard of people doing it. It doesn't matter. If that's what they want to do, that's them. But I think that I got to do what I'm doing now to get where I want to be, and that's sober on a daily basis. And so I don't play around with my sobriety. I like to joke and have fun. As a matter of fact, I like to go to a lot of these roundups. And that was the first place I found out that I couldn't dance sober. Okay. So if you think you got it going on when you're drunk dancing, they got one coming up here soon. Go to the Atlanta Roundup and dance sober. Okay. So yeah, you'll find out that you're just not the person that you are when you're drunk. And, you know, I remember years ago, And man, my family reunion is really like going to church. You know, we have these programs and they praying and all that, and you know, with all the family and all that stuff. And I remember when I was drunk one time, I went to a family reunion, and we pay a lot of money to go, and they have this big function, and being like a school on a stage, and I'm up on stage mooning people. Drunk, mooning people. I learned how to moon people when I was in the Navy. Okay? When I was drinking. That's just not the way a person is supposed to live. You know, mooning your relatives at a family reunion, it doesn't get you any points. And so, you know, I haven't been, and then I can say, since I've been sober, they've asked me to come up and do the same thing, to be the MC. Because they've seen the change in me. They didn't think I was going to moon anybody. You know, they've asked me to come and be a part of the program and be more responsible. But I had about maybe 7 or 8 years of sobriety before they asked me to come back. And so my life has changed, you know, to that point where, you know, I think I'm a better person. I really do. I think I'm a better person. The wife that I've married, now I've been married 9 years. She's never seen me drunk. And I can tell you this, like I said, practice this principle in, you know, in all your affairs. That's a tough one at home, being married. And she's not an alcoholic. She don't want to go to Al-Anon. That's where I really practice my program, at home, the most. And marriage, I always say marriage is tough, drunk or sober. Marriage is hell, drunk or sober. Okay, for me. And I'm still trying to learn how to relate to people, a wife. And so it's a lot of challenges. And I do a lot of praying about that. I really do. And because I don't want to get divorced. And I've already been one time, and it costs a lot of money. So I really want to stay in this marriage, and that's how I know it works. To be honest with you, that's my test every day. I'm not getting drunk, and I'm somewhat at peace. You know, I had to practice a lot of acceptance. I find it out when you relate to people, when you're trying to relate to people. And then I got a full-time job, and I work for the CDC, federal government. So this time of year, we spend it's a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, because you're spending a lot of money. And so, between my job, of course, full time, you know, that's what used to keep me drunk all the time. It's really life on life terms I could not face. And it's now I haven't drank in years, and I don't think about it anymore. So, you know, the obsession has been removed. Just the daily grind of life is what kept me drinking. I didn't want to face life distress. It was a lot of stress. And so today, you know, you don't have that to deal with. How are you going to deal with life once you get sober and you've got a full life, you got a family, you got jobs? Most people in here that come in, they don't have jobs at the beginning from what you hear people share, but eventually their life changes for the better. You know, you still got children, there's health, and there's health problems, sickness, death, a lot of stuff that, you know, people don't want to hear, and so they drink over. I always say I only drank two times in my life, and that was night and day. And, you know, I was always drinking. If I got the promotion, I was drinking. If I didn't get the promotion, I was drinking. You know, so, you know, if I was happy, hey, I'm going to drink more. If I'm sad, oh, hell, I got to drink some more. And so, you know, you just don't have that now. I don't have to worry about that. You know, the cops are not always after you when you're sober. You know, they're not always after you. They don't even care nothing about you. They really don't try. Get sober. And you can speed sometime, right down 85. And they won't pay you any attention. But it seems like when you get drunk, they right there behind you. They right there. They got your name. And bad things are always happening. You know, bad things are always happening. That's how I know my life had changed. I started getting into trouble. And I was what they call a 4.0, 4.0. There ain't nobody perfect, but that's how my evaluation was, 4.0. And then I started telling officers to go wherever they need to go. And then it was 3.6. you know, 3.6 and 3.8 in the military when everybody else is 4.0, he's not going to get you anywhere. So, you know, and it was always in personal behavior. You know, when I was drinking in the military, you know, I thought I was a CEO of the base, but I wasn't. You know, I thought I was a commanding officer. And I would tell, go hang out with pilots sometimes at the club, and I would try to tell them how to fly the airplane, but I'm a maintenance person. You know, so it was just one of those things, you know so much. You think you know everything when you're drinking. And sometimes you can get that way in sobriety. I check myself even in sobriety. But if you live in a day-by-day program, you don't have to check it as often. And so I know when I'm getting out of whack now. I was reading this thing about meditation, and they were talking about calling it witnessing awareness. And that's basically being able to analyze your problems and basically knowing how you feel about it, and then to basically constructively and calmly do something about it. You know, being able to really analyze what's going on with you. And, you know, when you know what's going to piss you off, and, you know, knowing how you feel about that, and then basically trying to react, not react, but respond. So how do you respond to situations now? That's my gauge right now today, is how do I respond if something happens and I don't like it? How I respond to that? And so I'm learning day by day that, you know, it's all about me, changing me, and acceptance, you know, my serenity. And that's one of the greatest assets that I've gained in this program, is peace and serenity from, you know, being sober. I don't have to be in charge. I'm just basically who I am. I can take the weight off the shoulders. You know, I don't have to have all these big boulders on my shoulders anymore. I'm not as angry. And I basically do a better job when I'm like this. I believe I do a better job when I'm basically sober. I'm a better person. And like the part in the book talks about, I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to change in the world, but what needs to change in me, in my attitude. I'm a stickler for that. When I sponsor people, you know, I usually try to tell them to, you know, read that part of the book. Acceptance is a great part of sobriety. I think it's the biggest part, to be honest with you. You know, you have to accept that you're an alcoholic. To me, that's the first step. If you don't accept that, I think you're trying to go back out and do some more research and development, and you're not accepting the fact, and you're not being honest, that you are the person who you are. You are that person. You know, and so an alcoholic is not, like they say, it's not a bad person. You know, I heard something the other day. When you're swerving to miss trees in the road, and you know, then you suddenly realize it's just basically, I bought one of these things to show you. If you realize it's just a little air freshener that's hanging off the rearview mirror, you know, you might be an alcoholic. And, you know, you need a 12-step program, and you need to check in really quick. You know, so it's one of those things that you got to believe that you are that person. And, you know, when you're doing things out of the ordinary, and to you, it's normal. It talks about that in the book. You know, our alcoholic white life seems like the normal one. We can't even tell the truth from the false. You know, our life, it seems like it's just, it's normal. You know, you swerve and miss trees in the road, boom. And all of a sudden, oh, it's just the air freshener hanging off the rear view mirror. You know, that's just normal driving for you every night. That's not normal for most people. And so, you know, you just, like I say, we're tornadoes. You know, ruin our way through lives of others. We damage other people's lives. Not only yourself, you're hurting your whole family. And it's a lot of hurt and pain in drinking. And you ask my kids now. My daughter, my youngest daughter, is 29. My oldest is 35. If you ask them which person they like the best, they'll tell you today, this person that you see standing up here. Now, my wife that I'm married to now, she don't know the difference. You know, she's always taking my inventory, but I'm taking hers too. You know, but she always, she hadn't seen that old Thaddeus. You know, she hadn't seen that boy, that bad boy back there. And so what she's seen was just the best. This is the best that it gets. I can't make it any better. You know, I just can't. I try to do my best. And, you know, sobriety is the best it's going to get, but that is right now. And then what you see, I'm always trying to change now. Believe me, I'm always trying to change. You know, she asked me, well, what's your problem? You know, I said, I'm recovered. I'm an alcoholic. But, you know, you ain't even drinking. What's your problem? You don't even drink. So we can't even have a really decent conversation. When I say something like that, then of course you get that starts another. That takes it to another level. But, you know, I do ask questions sometimes still. And then sometimes I'm learning just sometimes not, you know, worth even saying anything to certain people. And so that's what they say, that's wisdom. Wisdom is simply knowing what to ignore. And, you know, I got a lot to learn. But sometimes I'm still human and I have to, you know, I have to make a stance. And so life is, to me, is much more enjoyable. I haven't got a DUI in what, many years. I guarantee you won't get a DUI if you're sober. It's kind of hard. You might get a speeding ticket, but you ain't gonna get a DUI if you don't drink. And there are some things that just won't happen to you if you don't drink. And so, you know, I just really try to take this thing real calm. I try to do what I'm supposed to do, and let, you know, whatever happens, let it happen. That's how I know I'm not the way. That's how I know I'm trying to live God's will, I believe, when I'm not trying to plan the results. When I'm trying to do the best thing that's, you know, that I think for a situation, not trying to plan the results, and not get upset over what how it comes out. I got some more issues I'm dealing with. We always got issues we're dealing with. Some major issues at home with brothers and sisters over property. And, hey, it just whatever way it comes out, that's the way it comes out. And so sometimes I think this program has made me a wimp because sometimes you want to fight back real hard. But then if you live in this program to the best of your ability, you're like, you know what, it's not even worth it. And then when you call, you talk to your sponsor, and, you know, they say, what's your part in it? Well, I have no part in it. I'm doing the best I can. But if you really look at it, what is your part in it? Are you trying to help somebody else? Are you trying to help a newcomer or something? What are you doing? Did you pray about it? Yeah, I got you, man. So, you know, it's some things you just can't control. When you try to control something, to me, it's already out of control. And it's way beyond your comprehension of what you can do. And so, there's three stories in the book that I really love. Across the River of Denial. It talks about at the beginning, when she tried to control her drinking, she didn't enjoy it. And when she enjoyed it, she couldn't control it. I got to that point. I got to that point in life where I tried to control it and it wasn't enjoyable. And you know, I got to that point when it was enjoyable, I couldn't control it. So I just don't even try to go there anymore. That's a good story for me in the book. And I already mentioned acceptance. You know, acceptance is the answer, was the answer. I just believe that that's part of my serenity, and peace and serenity is, you know, is directly related to, you know, how am I accepting this thing, you know. And I like a peace and serenity of sobriety. I just love it. I mean, I'm an advocate for this program. I just love being sober today more than being drunk. I just can't say enough about sobriety. It's just great. And I act a lot different. So when I'm accepting stuff, you know, I'm not all frustrated. I'm a little bit more calm. I can deal with issues and situations. I can talk to people different. And I was talking to my wife the other day, and she was yesterday. And she was like, well, you always snapping. You snap at me. If I ask you a question, and sometimes I do. I probably do snap because I, you know, sometimes it's just sometimes that's just what I do, I guess. And I try with her. And I try not to. And I say it immediately afterward. I say, oh, I'm sorry. I apologize for snapping. I didn't know I really was snapping. I guess that's the way it is. And she looked at me like, you know, hey, you know, I'm glad you're apologizing, but I ain't apologize to you for nothing. So I just go along and say, okay, it's my part in it, and it makes me feel a little bit better knowing that this is what I'm thinking I'm supposed to do, because the program has told me that I need to do that. And I feel better for doing things like that. I'm not always frustrated. And so, you know, I go along and do what I'm supposed to do. And then the other story in the book, which basically what I think recovery is all about, it talks about AA teaches us to handle sobriety. And that's what the program has done. It teaches us how to relate to people better. You know, it teaches us basically how to solve our problems better. And the guy talks about, you know, God willing, we may not have to drink, you know, ever again. May not have to ever drink again. But you got to deal with life. You got to deal with life. And that's what it's all about. That's where the rubber meets the road, I believe, is dealing with life on life terms. And so whenever you get frustrated, I think you should have something in your mind already there so that you can lean on. You know, like they say, the time to call is the sponsor is before, not after. You know, I've had people call me after. And I say, well, you know, just call me the next day when you're sober up, because you don't even know what I'm talking about. We don't even know what we're talking about. And so I try to do the best I can with this program. And it's worked. It really has worked. It's one of these things that I think you have to come in and get the experience. The first 2 years of sobriety was hell for me. I cried because I was like a grieving process. I had lost my best friend. And today I don't even miss that thing. Whatever. I got this thing in the mail the other day, and from Kennesaw State College, and my last name is spelled Rollins, R-O-L-L-I-N-S. So the on the newsletter they had, it was spelled R-O-L-L-I-S-M. Rollism. And I was like, I wonder who they've been talking to. ISM. I sponsor myself. So, you know, you don't want that either. And they say if you're sponsoring yourself, you got a fool for a sponsor. So one of the main things that you need to do if you're new to the program is you need to get your sponsor. You need to go to a lot of meetings. You know, they say that this is all suggestions. You know, I always say the same thing. Suggestions is, you know, it's like jumping out of an airplane. It's only suggested that you open your parachute. You don't have to. You don't have to open that parachute. Just suggest it. Okay? So, it's one of those things, really, it's mandatory. These are the 12 commandments, really, for us. And I try to live by them. And it's made my life a lot better. And so I try to live by 1, 2, and 3, 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. And I'm always in a constant mind of prayer. I try to stay in a constant mind of prayer. I take time out, even at work. And I got all these little things posted on my desk. I take my time for this thing. Even if people try to rush me, you know, I try not to be in a rush where I can make mistakes. I just learned how to live life without drinking. And I'm always doing something to improve my situation. I'm always doing something to improve my situation. Last month I was looking at trying to pause. You know, that is, you need to pause. You know, and when you get upset, agitated. And I learned that right in the book. I read it all the time. And so I try to practice that, and now I've got to the point where I do it a lot more than I did maybe 2 or 3 months ago. And today I'm trying to do a lot more meditation, because I do want to get a closer contact with my higher power. I want to draw near to him, because I believe that that's what's really keeping me focused. And it relieves a lot of stress, and it keeps me in the right mindset, and I have to be submissive. And, you know, it's like being disciplined. And then sometimes I can get out, and the book talks about that. You know, don't be discouraged when we fall into our errors or our old ways, but these disciplines are not easy. What we should look for is progress, not perfection. So I ain't trying to be perfect in this thing either. So God is good, and he's shown me another way to live life. And I don't want to screw it up. So I've taken up a lot of your time, and I'm glad you're here. And thanks for having me, and I hope that you guys stay sober, and see you around. Thanks.
the person failed. Whether coming off a bender or coming out of jail, there is a solution, that's what you're looking for. But just open up the book and read the first 164. How it works and into action, tell you how to save your life. And they even got a chapter for your boss and for your wife. Working with others, we agnostics, little story and the rest. But we are not, a gloomy lot is the part I love the best. It's in the book, it's in the big book. You will find all your answers if you simply take a look. If you want to quit your drinking, son, come along with us. Read that big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. In a small roadside cafe, said, Jim, I think some whiskey in my milk might be okay. Well, it didn't do no damage, so he ordered several more up. And the next time they seen Jimmy, he was tore up from the floor up. It's in the book, it's in the big book. You can find our simple program. You can take the step we took. When you're skeptical and doubtful, there is one thing you can trust. It's the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Some say it's poorly written and the language is archaic, but it's steady saving lives around the world for goodness sake. It can help a PhD and those unscarred by education. If you don't have contempt prior to investigation, that's from the book. It's in the big book. Son, get one of your own. Take it home and take a look. It costs less than $7, but it's worth $1 million. It's the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Hell, we'll give it to you. The big book, Alcoholics Anonymous.